Hey guys, really glad to be here with the independent speculator that is Lobo Tiga. Glad to have you, Lobo. How are you doing?
Glad to be on the show.
And in fact, you're having a good day. Let's start off right there. We're at a resources conference, and apparently uranium is doing some good stuff today.
Yeah, well, this spot price is delayed, so I can't say that uranium is doing some good stuff, but uranium stocks are popping today. Last I checked, I saw 7, 8, 9% intraday moves in greed on uranium stocks. The big names, you all know them. So that's really interesting. There is a rumor on the internet that Kazatomprom is starting to admit that their production, not just this year, they've already yanked their guidance for this year. We've been waiting for them to update their guidance on 2025, and there's a rumor that that's starting to happen. Now, I haven't been able to find this because Kazatomprom doesn't have a press release on this. They do have a new tax treatment. I don't see that sending North American stocks soaring necessarily. There's also the U.S. budget. I think that those funds that the Biden administration, you know, wants $3 billion plus or minus for uranium development, you know, encouraging new nuclear and including the uranium fuel cycle in the U.S. That's going ahead. And I could see that mattering, but that's been signaled for a long time.
Yeah.
This isn't news. So as we speak, I actually don't know exactly what's causing these things to pop. What I do know is that just yesterday in another interview, somebody was asking me, and I was saying the news from Kazakhstan should come soon, and that should materially impact this market. So maybe it's starting to leak. Maybe that's what's happening. Don't know.
What news are you expecting for the lesser aware?
Because I'm not pushing this company. I don't own the stock. I'm not anti it or whatever. But it has to be discussed because it is the world's largest uranium producer. It's also the world's lowest cost uranium producer.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. So if prices, and you took economics 101, prices are determined at the margin. This is your marginal producer. This is the one that can move the price down or up if it can't produce at lower prices, right? So they've been having production problems. They actually, despite higher uranium prices, produced less uranium in 2023 than they did in 2022.
Right.
So, and part of this is a difficulty getting enough sulfuric acid. And part of this is Russia's war with Ukraine. There are logistical problems there. There are also problems shipping the uranium. There are numerous factors involved here. But the bottom line is that whatever their guidance is, they produce less than the year before. And they yanked their guidance for this year, 2024, that they're in.
Wow.
And they said, we'll come back to you on 2025.
Oh, goodness.
And that was supposed to be more or less right now.
Yeah.
So we're waiting for this other shoe to drop. Like, what is the guidance going to be for 2025? And again, prices determine at the margin. If your largest, lowest cost producer tells you, you know what, those pounds that you've modeled into your supply and demand model, they're not going to all be there.
Yeah.
That has a big impact on the price. So interesting times. We'll have to see how this plays out.
And this also coincides with the world almost simultaneously deciding to get over that Fukushima event and everybody pivoting back nuclear. So you've actually got a demand curve moving in one direction, and you're suggesting a supply curve from one of the elephants in the room potentially rolling over in the other way.
So the demand curve has been doing this for years. You know, the BRICS countries have been building these as fast as they can and increasing their plans. The funny thing about this is that even without that, the existing nuclear fleet is undersupplied from mine supply. The mine supply was insufficient. Never mind growth.
Correct.
The
above ground.
The existing nuclear fleet was not enough. But there was secondary supply that kept the market in balance. And then Sprott hoovered all that up, and suddenly, you know, supply and demand started working again, right? So that's the base case, is bullish anyway for your
market.
But then on top of that, you've got, you know, China building scores of these things, and India trying to keep, you know, so there's this new demand thing, which is huge. And then on top of that, what you're saying, like, we have this pivot in the West, this realization, I think it's driven by climate change panic, or just people who believe that we're all going to die in 12 years if we don't stop oil now.
And maybe a bit of reality on wind as a really viable source.
Right.
Well, bringing you back to the far more reliable.
But even without that reality, the math is that even with the most rosy projections for adoption of wind and solar, it's still not enough. You still need nuclear to close the gap.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be anti-wind and solar to say, you know what, we still need nuclear.
Yes.
And if you believe that we're looking at, you know, an extinction rebellion here, that we have to save our species, then sorry, but Fukushima may be an acceptable price.
Yes.
I'm not saying that to our dear Japanese friends that the disaster is not important or not serious or not a disaster. It's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, you know, this idea out there that, you know, we're all going to die, right, if we don't do something drastic. I don't believe that that trumps everything, but this is a popular belief in the younger generations. Like, people believe it, and they vote, by the way.
Yes.
People old enough to vote. So if that's the belief, and you have to have nuclear to make it work, and this is on top of everything else we've already talked about. So you've got Europe, despite Germany, we've got basically the rest of Europe going nuclear. We've got even the U.S., even the Biden administration talking about advanced nuclear. And yeah, it's an amazing how the times have changed. So this I don't want to say exploding in this context, but there's this huge growing demands scenario at the same time that supply is threatened.
Yes.
And the secondary supply is no longer there to feed the market.
How much is there above the ground? I remember reading, I think it was Matsusa's book, where he was talking about, you know, the old Russia deal on the decommissioning of warheads and how the super enriched uranium was getting mixed back into the tails.
Right, right. And tons to megawatts.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And there was that whole deal.
That's done.
So have we burnt up that sort of overhang, if we can call it? How do we have numbers on that?
I don't.
No.
Justin Hewin, the Uranium Insider, might.
Yeah.
But A, that program was in the 90s. It's done. B,
yeah,
we've got a new arms race going on with both Putin and, you know, pick your president, the U.S., the saber rattling, but particularly if the now apparent front runner for the next election in the U.S. wins.
Yeah.
No more peace dividend. Yeah, no more peace dividend. That goes into reverse.
Yeah.
But that doesn't need to happen.
You know,
everything else that we've already discussed makes that, you know, another tailwind. This is a market that has super strong fundamentals with nothing changing.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you've got like four different tailwinds.
Yeah.
Including this one that you're bringing up.
Yes.
You know, we don't want to talk uranium for this whole interview, I'm sure, but
100%.
I got to push back with one thing, and I'm a super bull, and, you know, my clients are probably very happy today with their uranium stocks in their portfolio, so I'm very, very positive here, but nobody should buy a uranium stock unless they're willing to take the risk or accept that there is a risk of, not a Fukushima, but say a Chernobyl-scale event. That would stop all of this. You know, it would come to a screeching stop. There would still be uranium mining. The existing nuclear fleet would still need uranium. But the price of uranium, the spot price, would tank. The stocks would absolutely crater. It's not a prediction. It's not a promise. I'm just saying that is a non-zero
event. It's a non-zero possibility.
And you have to be willing to, as a grown-up, go into this room and accept that this is a risk. Given, I can accept that. Okay, now I'm willing to speculate.
Yeah. I would still say it's a very small one, because Chernobyl was quite exceptional with a non-maintenance that was done. And I have
arguably it was
suspicions
more about Soviet stupidity than it is about nuclear engineering.
Yes, it's not nothing to do with nuclear failure. Yeah.
And that's really
just complete neglect.
Yeah. We have 70 years of nuclear energy, plus or minus.
Yeah.
Three Mile Island was nothing, really.
Yeah.
Nobody got hurt.
Yeah.
Fukushima was a tsunami.
Yeah.
Right. So Chernobyl is really the only example like that. So one example in 70 years, which really was more about bureaucracy than engineering.
100%. Right? Soviet collapse. It was the geography of Soviet collapse, really.
So, yes. So I'm not trying to scare everybody and say this is likely. I'm just saying it would be irresponsible for me to tell people this is a sure thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, absent that, it's as close to a sure thing as I think it gets in resource speculation.
100%. I mean, I don't typically start with uranium, but you've mentioned it, and I'd just like to go with whatever the flow is. We've actually had a spate of resources that have been presented to us here, actually. And uranium is one of those that has turned and run properly already, some way, probably further to go, as you say, and the stocks with it. But I'm kind of think of myself as the gold and silver guy. My whole look, if I sit, and we've had presented to us a spate of things that I can't think of one that I'm bearish on. It's just a case of who do you love most? It's a beauty parade. Unlike the leper colonies of world finance that all seem to have hyperinflated, got over indebted. They've all synchronized themselves and you have to choose who's the least ugly leper. This is almost a beauty parade. But criticize my model, because you're an independent speculator, you're a great macro understander. If we're going into essentially what I think is a debt collapse, this is why we've had the steepness of the rates. They've had to devalue the bond market, the debt market, and as well as rein in inflation being the cover story. But we've got a trillion coming every 100 days. I mean, you've got to cackle at that. I mean, you've got to really, because the dark humor is the only thing that keeps you alive with that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we're sitting in an environment where we have the legacy money system of gold that physically held is owned and doesn't go away. That's your insurance policy. And we've seen the Chinese dumping treasuries. So I'm sketching out a picture for your comment in essence. If we're going into a debt collapse, copper, maybe lithium and all this ESG and battery, all good generally. But if we're having going to have a demand destroying event of the scale that we may have on a basis of debt collapse, is the monetary alternative not the best assets if my supposition is correct, the golden symbol of this world?
So the short answer is simply yes.
Yeah.
The slightly more nuanced answer would be yes, but silver has been acting more industrial in recent years.
Yes.
So, and people call me Darth Silver and other names and things like that. And yep. I'm not a silver bear, but I mean, the data is simply there that silver has been acting differently this time.
Yeah.
You know, that famous thing of, you know, gold goes first, silver lags, and then more than catches up in the end of a bull market for monetary metals, right? That's an unbroken track record until 2020.
Yeah.
Like silver never caught up. To this day, silver has never caught up.
Some might say that was just the beginning, the first leg of your bull move,
well,
and that we've had
a
3 year.
That's a pretty long leg.
Yeah.
You know, you can make excuses if you want. Yeah. Sorry, but I'm just saying there's data now that tells you that even if you don't change your mind, at least think of silver.
The possibility.
And look at what's driving that market and recognize the reality. Last year, silver correlated more strongly with copper than gold.
Yeah.
That is a mathematical fact.
Yeah.
Okay. So ignore that if you want. But
we're bullish copper.
I am bullish copper, but after the recession, like the hard landing.
Exactly.
Hits, you know,
exactly. In terms of my scenario.
Who wants to buy an industrial mineral before that thing that always whacks industrial minerals?
Yes.
And so I'm very bullish on oil too.
But it'll also go down.
I'm partial to Lynn Alden's metaphor of it being like cigarettes, right? You know, they became unpopular. You starve it of capital, but people don't stop smoking.
Yeah.
And so the price of cigarettes went up.
Yeah.
I think oil is just like that. I agree with her on that.
Mm.
But I'm not going to buy it ahead of the hard landing becoming, you know, ahead of Team Soft Landing capitulating.
Correct.
And the panic that will cause. Now, here's a couple caveats. Like, I get it. I think I'm with you on that. But it's dangerous to assume that something that we're at Rick's conference, you know, his inevitable and imminent thing.
Yes.
Right. You know, is that debt collapse really imminent? There are tremors in the ice that it may be cracking. But, you know, in 2008, 2009, all of the smarter people in the business, my mentors, the people who were
said we were one second away.
Yes, right. This was it. There was no way the powers that be were going to be able to hold the house of cards up. It was shaking and trembling to the ground. And guess what? They did kick it down the road.
Mm.
I mean, years and years down the road.
Yeah.
So I'm very cautious about saying, "Oh, this is it. You know, we're going into this thing now."
Yeah.
So
there is a difference between, for those that weren't at the conference, inevitable, which means it's got to happen,
right,
versus imminent being tomorrow.
Right.
Or next hour, yeah.
Right.
And I think that's the point you're
making. And sorry, let me throw one more thought in here.
Sure.
You know, I am very much on team hard landing, but the Fed has trained U.S. markets, at least, and the world watches, right? The Fed has trained people to treat bad news as good news.
Yeah.
So let's say that the brown stuff starts hitting the fan.
Yeah.
That could actually, instead of causing a market crash, that could cause new record highs in the S&P 500.
Certainly equities seem to be very
right,
well.
Because everybody will say, oh, bad news. So more easy money.
Yeah.
And they actually won't even be wrong.
No.
Like if the news is bad enough, Powell pivots and yes, they will get the easy money. Now, will that overcome the actual badness of the bad news? That's a different risk.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, like, even if you're right in your outlook, to be wary of assuming that
100%.
Like, you know, what should happen will happen.
Correct.
We're in a through the looking glass world. The one thing, and to your point, that I'm confident of is, however that plays out, I think it's very bullish for monetary metals.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. I actually have that same thought pattern that you have, that people are expecting one thing and I actually think something else could happen. And so the point I like to make, and I'd like you to critique the hypothesis or kick it and give it a poke with a stick. Many people think that it's absolute that the central banks get to set the rate. And when you get to the extremities that we could be approaching, there does come a moment where the market takes over. And I point to the microcosm event that wasn't a microcosm really then. It was a big event, but relative to the global, the Soros's pound crisis, where the Bank of England actually changed rates twice in a single day. You know, they didn't have a change of opinion on what they did in the morning and have a bad cucumber sandwich.
Right,
and
right.
God damn it, we got it wrong. What were we thinking?
Yeah.
The market said no.
Yeah.
And it continued to spill, and they had to go, we got to go again. They were outspent and they had to move the rates. And, you know, you had double digits. People were saying, I need to sell my house. I won't be able to make mortgage payments.
Yeah.
That whole event, we kind of, the US could eventually have a situation where and the whole central banking role is they're okay with markets moving. They don't like a disorderly move. We could get to that point where the Fed loses credibility, the faith is gone, and you get a disorderly interest rate spike where everyone is expecting pivots. I always keep saying the pivots are going to get less because nobody wants to buy the other end of the seesaw, the debt. Because for the rates to go down, if everyone's expecting 7 cuts, you've got to, who's bidding up the debt markets?
Right. Okay, so many ways we can take this. But first and foremost, you know, kudos for even pointing this out. People talk about how, or people seem to think, and I think the Fed, Fed speak encourages, is that people seem to think that they have like this button in the Eccles building or a knob. They just turn it to, 2.5.
Yeah. And that's gone.
Right. But that's not how it works. The FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee.
Really?
Open Market Committee.
Yeah.
Right. What do? Is they intervene in the marketplace.
Yeah.
They buy and sell to move prices up and therefore yields in the opposite direction. So there's no button that they set. They literally cannot set interest rates. They intervene in the market to produce. And this is why they have a target range, 5.5, right, whatever, because they have to intervene in the market, which is messy, and it responds. And that is a target rate. It's called a target rate for a reason, because they can't actually set it. So that's important. And it's good that you're educating your audience to understand that actually they cannot set rates.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that their power to target them and influence them is not great.
Yeah.
And, the recent member with memory of the gilt crisis and Andrew Bailey doing his pivot and instantly responding, if they panic, if the brown stuff hits the fan and, they will pull out the stops. And I do think that, credibility or not, they have the printing press on their side, if you will. And ultimately, they will drive the rates where they want them to. The question isn't, can they do it? It's what's the cost of doing it? What are the consequences of that?
Could they be left in a situation where the Fed has to become the primary buyer? Because we essentially have a situation where the Chinese are retreating from all accounts.
Right.
They're committing to gold. Russia, all the people that are the wrong side of the bifurcation are walking away.
No, I get it. And so could there? Yes. Will it happen this year? I don't know. Will it happen within 5 years? Maybe not. Maybe, that's why I brought up the example of 2008, 2009. Things were so rickety. I mean, according to even mainstream reports, we were within 48 hours of checks not clearing banks. That's how bad it was in 2008.
Yeah.
And you'd think with things that close to actual collapse of the banking system, how could they possibly kick the can down the road?
Yeah.
But they did.
I would argue, I get that total point, but I'll say the banking system is an intermediation that is one layer lower than the central banking system. And it's almost as if the virus has now gone at a level up and we're now at the central banking system. So that was more organizational thing. What those commercial banks needed was the Fed to say, you're backing him up. You're not backing up. We'll back you. Go and do what you need to do. And so they had some time. They clung some heads and they taped over it. What happens when we are that level higher? and it's now that central banking level, and it's reliant on external support, which is no longer there.
I hear you. And the answer is, I don't know. Nobody knows. Yeah, that would be uncharted waters. But it's hard for me to see a way that ends nicely.
Doesn't end well. And even, it has to be said, in a rush for liquidity, there'll be a lot of full sellers. Even precious metals will go down. Yeah. As much as you and I are going to say,
we've seen that repeatedly. Yeah. There's a liquidity crunch. And people often misunderstand or they despair. Oh, you know, gold's supposed to go up in a time of crisis. It's going down. Well, it's not actually gold failing its job. It's gold doing its job as the source of liquidity of last resort.
Yes.
And it's painful, but it's brief. It's, you know, people being not selling because they want to. It's because their margin clerk is on the phone saying, you are selling. You know,
we're closing you out.
Right. So that's what happens. And for the people who are, and maybe this is an actionable takeaway, right? We don't know when this will happen. But if you're ready for this possibility, if you're thinking ahead like this, you will have your own liquidity on hand to take advantage of it.
So which is why cash should be so lucky.
Right.
Is a good holding, cash in hand, not in the bank.
Yes.
Yeah. To be clear.
Right. So, or yes.
Equivalent.
Personally, as a speculator, I never speculate on margin because I don't want to be one of those guys forced to sell. I want to be one of those guys buying when those other guys
are forced to sell. 100, that's when you get the best price. Isn't it the worst? So the blood's
now,
in the street.
Of course, now who can pick the bottom? Like I didn't pick the bottom in 2008 and I didn't pick the bottom in 2020, but I bought low and sold
high. You did
well
enough.
Right.
Yeah. And to your point, with the lockdown events, that essentially was the closure of the entire economic system for a while. Gold shrugged off its sell-off very, very quickly. Silver too, but it fell down to, I think, $11. But gold didn't even have too bad a fall, and then it was straight back up. And that was pretty extreme. I'd argue that the economic malaise of COVID lockdown.
That was the sharpest V-shaped recovery that I've seen in my career.
Yeah, it really did its best. And then went on higher for those that were in your position, the buyers, maybe not at the bottom, but a whole bunch cheaper. And that was a nice line of efficiency to wherever you got to exit.
Not such an extreme way, but it did that in 2008 too. Like people forget this, but at the end of 2008, you know, the global financial crisis, gold was up for the year. Like December 31st, gold was in the green at the end of the year.
So I do remember
gold
that.
And cash were the only things that you could have done okay with.
Yeah, and fell to a low around 668, 670.
Wait, 711.
Yeah, around the upper sixes or the low sevens, and then the event. This is, I'm a technical analyst and a chartist as well, though, and the natural geometry of that capitulation essentially set up the subsequent move that took us to the 1.9 and above.
And I'm not a TA either. I didn't bottom tick that, but I participated. And I bought a house with the proceeds. So
that's good trade. Well done.
The scale of the opportunity.
This is a resource sector. We've had a lot of mining companies. And to me, the one big question that sort of hung over everything is why the miners underperforming. Some have argued that they're not underperforming. Some have said there's dilution of gold ounces per share because they're forced to keep issuing stock to keep bringing in the funds for expansionism. And that's led to obviously net reserves to the stock pool is now being diluted. What's your take? And is it just a question of time? Or are you staying in the metal for now? And how are you going to time a possible inflection into individual? Or are you already in the equity?
Just this. Real quick. The metal is different from the stocks.
Correct.
I don't speculate on the metal. I don't even see gold as an investment. I see it as savings.
Yeah.
Like I literally.
So you're saving gold.
Yes, I have a savings account. Like in a bank, I have a checking account. That's it. If I'm going to put money away for savings, I don't buy CDs or leave it in some counterparty. I buy bullion.
Great.
Right. Okay.
I love that.
So completely, you know, if I want to make money, then I'm not going to put it in the metal, which doesn't give me any leverage to the movement. Even if I'm bullish, why would I go with the metal when I can get leverage on the stocks?
Yeah.
But they have been underperforming since 2020.
Yeah.
And that's going to your question. Like the stocks seem to be broken. So one answer is, the quick version is, yes, I get it. Yes, they have underperformed. That is true. I won't try to gild the lily. And for good reasons. Also some bad reasons. But the recency bias was, you know, when did we last have a spike in gold? Well, before 2020, It was 2011, right? Yeah. And then what happened? Bear market for 5 years.
Yeah.
Before that, what was the, you know, it was 1980. And then what happened? Well, 20 more years of bear market, right?
Worse, yeah.
So,
but the cycle is shortening, isn't it?
That's a... well, we could go there. But the point is that gold had a big spike.
Yeah.
In the only two examples, or 100% of the examples like that since 1971, when there was a gold-dollar exchange ratio, right, were universally negative after the spike. So it was reasonable for even the smart money to say, okay, we've had a spike. The next big move is going to be down.
Down, yeah.
So why would the stocks go up in that environment?
Yeah.
Right. So in my view is that the stocks...
But does that mean they're calling tops, the market, on the gold move, which would be a bit old?
Yes, in a way. Well, but not necessarily calling a top. They're saying the next big move is likely to be down.
Preparing for 6 months ahead.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, or my way of seeing it is that the gold stocks were leading gold, and they often do.
Yeah.
Historically, the stocks often lead the metal, or did. So the stocks were leading the metal lower. The smart money was leading gold down. Problem is they were wrong. Gold didn't go down, it kept going up. And now 4 years in, people are starting to realize, oh, look, maybe gold won't go down, maybe, right? And so, but there's also the other issues you brought up, you know, the dilution, the profligacy of the majors. Rick Rule himself, you know, saying, you know, it takes real talent for the commodity you're producing to go up sevenfold and for you to produce negative free cash flow in that period. I've charted this, it's actually true.
Thanks.
Right. So there were good reasons for people to be skeptical of the miners delivering this time, on top of this recency bias thing I'm talking about. And I think we're getting to the point now where that wake up call is happening. You know, gold hasn't corrected. We're hitting new nominal all time highs this year. And here's the thing for the stocks, where we're talking about stocks, right? The companies did a crappy job. I think that's the technical description of what happened. But Q1, all three of the biggest gold producers beat. We're now verging on Q2. So this is interesting. If you have one quarter of good production in financial results or improved financial results from the sector, people could say, oh, it's just a fluke.
Yeah.
But if you have two quarters and gold
and the
gold
decent
dollar
prospects
exchange
for three.
Rate is hitting, right, then people are starting, you know, I think even not gold, but you know, even the Warren Buffett types could start looking at this and saying, that's a good business.
Yeah.
This is a business with increasing margins.
Yes.
And there's a moat, by the way.
Yes.
Like you discover something, it
which
tends
is
to take
17
years.
And 17.8 years was Keith Neumeyer's average.
Well, okay, whatever.
Doesn't matter. It's a long time.
Right. Exactly. So this is a good business. It's got expanding margins. There's a moat. This is even... Mr. Don't Lose Money.
Own the only toll bridge into the town. Yeah.
So I think this is exactly what this market needs to get the gold stocks moving. And okay, you could say, oh, that's a nice sounding theory, Lobo. That sounds great. But the fact is that for all the underperformance we've been suffering through for years, in this breakout, the hockey stick we had this year, the gold stocks got their mojo back.
Yeah.
Like they did respond this year.
Yes.
So like, you know, on a week where gold was up 1%, at least the better gold stocks that actually had gold, right? You know, they'd be up 3%, 4%, 5%.
Correct.
Which is exactly why we bother owning these stocks in the first place, right?
Correct. You're to get the multiple.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, you might say, okay, well, you know, that's just one off or whatever. But this is part of what I'm saying. It actually fits this pattern. I think it's material and important that the producers have got their act together and they're starting to actually, you know, do what a business is supposed to do and make money. And we'll see. I think that will continue in this earnings season. I think it will be very beneficial for the stocks.
I think there was some industry, answering my own question, and I love your answer and thank you for it, but pick apart some things for me. Some were specific to management of individual companies, but some were industry. We did have the inflation turn and they didn't get the immediate benefit. So they would have had a cost rising effect that come in. They seem to have been, such has been the, since the 80s, which was the last really, really significant bull market. You can argue 2011 was pretty good, but they seem to have become a flattened industry so much by market cap that institutionally they've been descaled by a market to get the real institutional early money. Everybody, you've got that heat map with NVIDIA that basically has got an Apple market cap. It feels like a space of a Monday.
Interesting that you bring up NVIDIA because, I mean, that has become such a craze.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you don't need the institutional desk to recommend NVIDIA. They're clients are calling them, all of them saying, get me in this stock now. I don't care what you have to pay.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wonder in the world of the internet, in the world where it's a world of meme stocks, which seems like it shouldn't even be possible.
Exists, yeah.
But not only is there such a thing as meme stocks, there is a mining stock that I won't mention that became a meme stock. And you probably know who I mean. With a project that has famously bankrupted multiple operators. Somehow this stock became a meme stock. So in a world where you can basically go B2C, to use the parlance, it may be that we don't actually have to care whether the institutional desks ever really get it.
Right.
You know, if gold goes up 20% from where we're at now, we're pushing the BOA's $3,000 gold. This isn't my prediction or whatever. This is the Bank of America.
Yeah.
Their year-end gold for this year is $3,000.
I agree with that.
If that's happening, you know, who cares what the brokers are saying? I think most people are pretty asset agnostic. They just want to make money.
Yeah.
And okay, there might be some Bitcoin maximalist out there who are like, never gold, I don't care. Mm. Right? Enjoy being poor. Right? But most people, they just want to make money. And gold's happening, and it's making another record after another record, at least nominally.
Yeah.
Right? And the companies are making money.
Yes.
Right? The business is actually working. And the stocks are moving. Most people are going to jump on that momentum.
They will.
So, you know, I don't know if we ever need the institutions to get the memo or not. But, you know, it wouldn't hurt if they did.
Yes. So, yeah. And there was also the PR. Maybe they just haven't been as good as communicating it. I mean, if we look at the average age group of the attendee, we're probably not getting enough of the 30s to 40s or the 20s to 30s group. And we got plenty of the 40s
plus. I
got to
push back on that. I think the...
Okay.
You know, I'm used to going to these conferences. Or when I started going to these conferences, the audience had no hair. And then after 10 years, they had silver hair mixed in with the no hair.
Yeah.
And now there's all kinds of colors of hair. There's black hair. I'm seeing black hair right in front of me right now.
Oh, good.
Blonde. I'm seeing
thick hair.
Okay.
Yeah. You're making me jealous.
There's only one person with no hair in front. Well, yeah. I mean, you're sideways to me. Sorry.
Well, that's good news.
I'm not joking. This is real. Let me put it this way. I have people on my team, and I've had others on my team, and I do have a team now, who came to metals and mining through crypto. Like, they made money speculating on that casino, and they're like, okay, well, what else can I speculate on?
Yeah.
And you start looking around. Again, if you're not religious about this, but your goal is to make money, and you look at what's happening, where is money happening?
And what I like is that gold is slightly more defensive than crypto. It may not give you the 100Xs and the 10Xs, but the point of the matter, once you've made some money, you're not only looking up, you're also looking a little bit down, and you're saying, I don't want to give too much of it back either. And some of them have done a few cycles, because we've also got crypto people that have joined us for crypto in our community and have graduated into that. So, yeah, I like that point, and it's one well made.
Well, I'm not anti-crypto. I'm not hostile to it. I actually think, given the gross mismanagement of money by governments of the world, I see crypto as a market response to that mismanagement. So I'm fine with that. I have a problem with the valuations of some of these things. I can't get my mind around that. But I preface this because I also like to say, in terms of your downside risk, you know, gold works even when the internet goes down or the electricity goes out. So even if I wanted to save, you know, if I had a Bitcoin and gold portfolio, I'd want to have the gold too, in case there was a scenario in which I couldn't use my crypto.
Well, I like to say it's about as decentralized as you get when you hold it in your own hand, in your own home.
That's right.
And you're not reliant on state power or anything to move it around.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
What more is there to say? Loba, thank you for your time. Tell us, parting shot. First of all, what counsel would you give? What's your 3 bullet or your 5 bullet point for anyone watching this content and saying, look, we've got some good minds here. What should I do? What Lobo's take for surviving the potential Noah's flood? And then after that, how people can engage with you.
Okay. So I guess a couple quick points are, you know, forget about inevitable. Like, there are a lot of people have very persuasive theories about, you know, the market crash, or the BRICS are going to adopt a gold-backed currency, or Bitcoin's going to rule them all in the end.
Yeah.
Right? These wonderful theories that make great intellectual sense, but they don't actually give us actual investment advice now. If our goal is to make money, Forget about inevitable. Forget even about imminent, because you can be wrong about that.
Yeah.
Look at the trends that are actually happening now.
Yeah.
Like, this is a trend in motion. So, like, gold this year is a trend in motion.
Yes.
Uranium is a trend. We're consolidating and correcting right now. But if you look at the five-year picture and how we started with uranium, that is a trend that's happening now. Those supply and demand fundamentals that we talked about, this isn't just a theory of, oh, someday uranium's going to have its day in the sun.
Yeah.
This is something that's happening right
starting.
Now.
Yeah.
So this is a big thing with me. It's my mantra, forget about inevitable or even imminent. I want to know what's happening now. In terms of picking investments, be skeptical.
Yeah.
Everybody who's going to pitch an investment at you, they're a salesman, and that's okay. It's their job.
Yeah.
Right. But your job is to be skeptical.
Yeah.
And to push back, to question,
probably
to doubt.
Kick the tires.
That's right. Due diligence is not optional in the speculation business. And that's where I come in. I'm the due diligence guy on Twitter, X, or whatever you want to call it. Due diligence guys.
And that has led you to hold gold as your insurance.
Yes.
And your savings, and not your investment. Speculating in the likes of uranium stocks.
Or I'm agnostic. If it's lithium after the recession, not now.
Yeah.
If lithium has been battered and beaten up. Rick likes to say he loves hate, right? So people are hating on lithium now. It's shutting down. And this isn't a prediction. I'm just saying, when the time comes where I am looking for industrial minerals, then I'll have a look at the lithium market that time, because it'll be on sale.
Yeah. Right?
And I want to buy low, sell high is the idea. We'll have to see how that goes. That's the MO.
And you do feel, or you wouldn't like to time. There's a demand destroying. We're in some form of a recession now. Do you agree?
I agree, yeah.
And
they're always recognized in hindsight.
Right. Exactly.
There are indicators. People are talking about the SOM indicator right now. Yeah. That's in even the mainstream media are covering.
Yeah.
My favorite indicator is what I call the Gundlach indicator. Jeff Gundlach, the bond king.
Yes.
Talks about the even longer term unemployment versus the spot, if you will, current unemployment rate. That has an 80-year unbroken track record of predicting recessions.
Yeah.
Those lines have crossed now. And by the way, that is...
So what is being compared that close? So to explain that one, because it's interesting.
Three-year moving average of unemployment versus the current rate.
Yeah.
And what that means when the lines cross is that unemployment is accelerating.
Yes, faster than the aggregate.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Okay. And the longer-term average makes it a more difficult hurdle to pass. So that most difficult hurdle to pass has an unblemished 80-year track record of coinciding with recessions. So the key word here is it's coincident. And it's not a leading indicator.
Yes.
This isn't telling us, the lines have crossed, there's going to be a recession.
No, it's already
telling
happening.
Us we're in a recession now, and the NBER will recognize it a few quarters from now. That's what that says. Now, either that or this time is different.
That immediately triggers me to mention that we've, of course, been in a yield curve inversion for an extended period. And like what you were just describing, the name tag for the crisis only gets given when it reverts.
Right.
Its break back up. It's been one of the biggest inversions ever, though. It's stayed inverted.
But see, that's the issue. You could say this time is different. The yield curve has never been so inverted for so long.
Yeah. Pre-80s, we do have examples, but not in the modern era.
Pre-80s. Well, then that's exceeding my knowledge. To my knowledge, it's like, how many months? 29 now or something?
Yeah, whatever. It's exceptional. It's exceptional.
Yeah. So... maybe this time is different, but I'm not one to bet on this time being different. When it comes to economics...
Well, it's got 100% record as well, and it's not calling them all the time. It's not, I got the last 34...
But isn't the yield curve disinversion a leading indicator? Like, it doesn't tell you we're in, it tells you it's coming? So
typically, you've been in a crisis, and what it illustrates is that economically, it is leading, as you've said. And typically the crisis is named and known and becomes public on its imminent reversion. So we actually dipped during 2019 during the repo before the repo crisis, and it reverted on the repo crisis. So it was not a particularly long one. Mm. But then we got all the events that may not probably be mentioned for YouTube's case. And then very similarly on the .com, actually 96, 97, it was looking a bit wobbly. It had dipped and it reverted back up only end of 99 going 2000. And then we had the .com bust. So it kind of led, but then it called all those major crises, and it hasn't called
lots of times, it's got 4 out of 4 rather than I called 13 of the last 4 recessions, yes,
right.
So it's also got that sort of 100% record.
And I think we're on the same page. I think it will be right. You know, either then I'll just be wrong. Like, this isn't one of these things where I'm going to make excuses or move the goalposts or something.
Yeah.
Either we're right, it's happening now.
Yeah.
And therefore, we have very clear marching instructions, like monetary metals, uranium, because it's recession. Oh, we didn't touch that, by the way.
Yeah.
Talking about 3
uranium.
Out of 4.
Yes, go ahead.
Uranium has gone sideways to up in 3 out of the 4 last recessions. So it's not recession proof, but there's math there that tells you that it's very recession resistant.
Well, it's cheap power. So there's also the substitution.
Yeah, it's the one for hospitals and airports and things that you want to work regardless of recession.
They've got to keep going.
So basically everything else, though, let's wait.
Even food goes down. That people need to realize.
Right.
Yeah.
So our marching orders are very clear. And if we're right, and we'll find out soon. Either we're right or we're wrong, and we'll know by the end of this year.
Fascinating. And for people that wish to stay in touch with your great insights, which you've shared with us very generously, thank you, by the way.
Sure. It's very simple. IndependentSpeculator.com. And the key takeaway I like to tell people is I have a free weekly letter. You may not agree with everything I say. You may not like what I say about silver or whatever your favorite metal is, but I promise that I will not spam you. You won't get a flood of daily advertisements if you sign up for that. You get one email per week. See if you like my work. See if you want me to be your due diligence guy.
That's awesome. And by the way, I'll be one of those because I'm not, and I'll be doing it right after this. And I suggest to you out there that you do that too. And I appreciate the no spam rule, and we have a very similar policy. We will never sell our lists, and Lobo does the same.
Yes,
so there you go. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. It was awesome.